So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, author of How to Fight Presidents and staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hey everybody, I'm Soren Bowie. I am a writer for American Dad. Period. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
How have you been? It's been, we recorded-
1 week since you looked at me.
Yes. Can I tell you that was like, I had an idea for this show in the very beginning where, this is when we started conceiving of the show while I was still unemployed. So I had a lot of time to think about different things that I wanted to do with it. And I wanted to do a version of it where, I would include audio drops from songs in place of common phrases that we would say.
Oh,
so
boy.
Like anytime one of us said it's been, I would replace it with Bare Naked Ladies. Or anytime someone said it's been a while, replace it with the lyric from the Stained song, it's been a while. But to make the podcast, I think, like completely unlistenable, where it would be a mix of our voices and abrupt, jarring snippets of songs.
We do say somebody.
Yeah, we do that a lot. Yeah.
Thanks to BetterHelp for supporting Quick Question. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/QQ. Start living a better life today.
Thanks to Hawthorne for supporting Quick Question. Hawthorne is a premium grooming brand that tailors your personal care routine to your unique profile, with skincare and hair care made just for you. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine at hawthorne.co and use promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase.
Man, so there are a lot of things that we talked about when we were going to make this podcast, and it was like the thing you had going on at the time, so you were pretty eager about it. I sort of am sad that we'll never get that podcast, because you were considering putting a lot of work into this.
I was coming up with so many like games for us to play and recurring segments and stuff, and then I got a job.
Yeah.
And focus on it this much.
Honestly, I do like where it's landed. I mean, this is great for me. It's nice to talk to you. And we do now save our conversations specifically for this podcast. So you're getting the genuine article, baby.
Yeah, and because you were just traveling, we recorded a bunch of these together, not on our normal every other week schedule. So truly, it's been a while. It has been a while since we've caught up. So what's going on? How are you?
Good. Yeah, went on a trip where I went to two different weddings, and traveled like all over the lakes of Minnesota, basically. And I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but I might be lake people now, Dan.
Oh yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's a different type of lake culture there too. It feels a little more upper crust than like lake culture of like Lake Havasu or something like that.
Okay.
So I can get behind it more. There's the white trash element of it is, it feels more devoid of that. Although I will say I went to a county fair in Minnesota and it was a grim slice of Americana. There were, nobody had teeth.
Did you have fairs growing up in your strange mountain town?
No. We had one called Mountain Fair, which was, it was not what you would consider like a LA County Fair or a Minnesota Fair or anything like that. It wasn't a state fair by any means.
Fair season was one of the most exciting times for me growing up, because there's like, I don't know that we went to state fair in New Jersey ever, but there was a chunk of time in the summer where there was like, where every local church was having a fair or like a festival of some kind. And there was like the Greek festival also, and there was the county fair, and it was just like, it was fair season. And we just got fucking pumped because it's summer and you're a kid. And I say kid, like we're old enough that we are doing things as a group of kids together without our families.
Yeah.
And it was just like a thrilling, anything is possible chunk of summer for middle and early high school, New Jersey youths with no money. We're just like, fair season. Don't wait up, mom. I'm going to go to the Holy Family Carnival and, ride one of these rusty, janky ass Gravitron machines where people routinely get whiplash. And then maybe, I don't know, I'll stumble out of that and fall in love. Who knows?
Right.
There was so much possibility in fair season.
Yeah, there is. Even at this fair where it was clear that it was not my people. It was like a different group, somebody on a different team. There was still like this like unearthly horniness in the air of like all these kids running around. They're like 14 or 15, just like hoping they meet somebody. And like they're dressed up, you can tell. They've put on the clothes that are like, this is what I went and got. Yeah. And I've been saving this for fair season. And so some of them, bad choices, because it's sweltering. It's like super hot. And they've chosen this long sleeve button ups where they're like, I look good. And they're just sort of sweating through it. But yeah, there's like these, just like this look at this feral look in their eyes where they're just like, who's going to fall in love with me?
Yeah, because you don't, there's no like, you're not at an age where you go obviously to like bars and clubs, and school dances was a thing that happened once a year. So this was like the chunk of time in the summer where you were at a social gathering with people who you might not ordinarily see. You know, it's not like your group of friends that you go to friendlies with or go to the movies with. It's just like, this is all the swinging single 14-year-olds.
Yeah, it's like the first time you have that structureless hangout with people your age, and it's just the liberation of it. You're like, I could be anybody here.
Absolutely. What if I'm a person who wears a chain? I'm gonna let's debut the chain tonight.
That hits close to home. I could see some of that happening there. And I also rode a lot of rides with my son. He's at the exact age where he's old enough to ride most of the rides, but he's not allowed to go on alone. And or the height, I should say. Mm-hmm. Age has nothing to do with it. Age ain't nothing but a number. And he wanted to go on the Tilt-A-Whirl. He really likes the Tilt-A-Whirl. And I was like, yeah, fine. I like the Tilt-A-Whirl. And I got on it for the first time and ruined my whole day. Like, I felt hungover the rest of the day. It just throws something out of you.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not a ride person anymore. It made me really nauseous to be on it. And I kept thinking, like, this ride should end soon, right? Is he just giving us extra time? Don't do that, sir. And then my son wanted to go on it again and again. And so I'd have to sort of like calibrate in between. I'd be like, I will just give me like an hour and then we'll go on it again. I cannot ride it again right now.
Right. And especially like with something like that where your body just doesn't want it. So you can't medicate against that. You can't be like, maybe if I just have some water. No, there's nothing that's going to solve this problem.
No, you just feel like shit. Hey folks, what interferes with your happiness or prevents you from achieving your goals? I think if you really look in your heart, it's you, my friend. There are different things in your life that are creating artificial hurdles so that you don't actually have to even think about achieving them. Well, let's get over those hurdles. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You connect in a safe and private online environment, so it's convenient, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours, so it's quick. All without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. Those chairs, they suck, especially this time of year when you're hot and you sit on those vinyl chairs, right? And you got your shorts on and then you got to get up and it's going to make that noise and you just know it. And there's other people in the room. You don't have to deal with any of that. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need to. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available if that's something you need. BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide too. So if you're listening to this in Queensland or Iceland or wherever, whatever quick question is actually resonating, I hope there's somebody out there. Hey, you could also log on to BetterHelp. It could be for you as well. Anything you share is completely 100% confidential, but BetterHelp is not a crisis line. It's professional counseling. You get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus you could schedule weekly video or phone sessions and send a message to your counselor anytime you need to. Check out the testimonials posted daily on their site. Listen to professional counselors who are specialized in all kinds of areas, from sleeplessness, trauma, anger, griefs, self-esteem issues, issues with sexual gender identity, depression, stress, anxiety, a lot of the things you might be feeling during a pandemic. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Start living a happier life today. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/QQ. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's betterhelp.com/QQ for 10% off your first month. Thanks, BetterHelp. And how have you been, Daniel? I didn't ask yet.
I've been good. I have a podcast-related update.
You're getting a podcast?
We've talked about this before on the show. I have since played my first company softball game.
I'm so excited to hear about this.
I was, as you know, and our listeners know, I was very nervous about it. And the day before, a bunch of us went to batting cages. And this is going to be a real test for me because I genuinely haven't swung a bat in such a long time. I was so out of the game when it comes to baseball or softball that, like, the morning that I had to go to batting cages, first of all, I didn't sleep well the night before because I was so nervous about it. Second of all, I stood in front of my mirror with the bat that I have for self-defense and was just like, how do I stand? Is this, where do my elbows go? Do I look like someone who's done this before? And just like posed for a while to confirm, yeah, this is what a normal American boy looks like swinging a baseball bat.
You put a little baseball card up in the corner of the mirror and you're like, okay, let's see. Yeah. What? How's Don Mattingly do it?
Yeah, how's Wade Boggs? Yeah. You and I apparently both stopped watching baseball in 1997.
As soon as I pulled it, I was like, oh, that's too old. And then you did Wade Boggs. I was like, thank you. Thank you. Okay.
And so then we went to the batting cages. And as soon as I was like making contact with the ball, I was like, okay, I can do this part. That's fine. I won't like totally embarrass myself if the ball comes to me. I was still very nervous about fielding. And we get there. We were playing Rolling Stone was our opponent. And we were up first. And I was batting seventh. Wisely, like,
deep.
You know how many people are on a baseball roster. Team? Yeah, yeah. And it was... I want to get ahead of this. I didn't hit a home run. There's two outs, and I'm up to bat. Bases are loaded.
Whoa.
And that's, like, surprisingly very... low pressure for me because I'm walking up to the plate thinking, well, there are three possibilities. Hit a home run, or I guess four possibilities. Hit a home run, which I'm not going to do. There's no version of reality where I hit a home run. Strike out, which I really don't want to do. No one has struck out yet. And it's like softball, adult company softball games are not designed to strike people out. So I really don't want to do that. Possibility number three, I hit the ball and someone somewhere gets out because it's bases loaded. There are lots of easy outs to make and it's two outs, so it's whatever the easiest out is.
Yeah.
And possibility four, I guess, is like hit the ball in a way that doesn't get someone out. Like maybe there were a bunch of errors.
Possibility six, the quadruple play where they just grandfather the outs to the next inning.
Sure. It's such a devious play that you skipped possibility number five. Okay. And what happened was I got us out of the inning. But I hit the ball. I hit the ball and to shortstop and they made an easy play to second, ending the inning. And that, believe it or not, is a victory for me because I didn't strike out and I made contact with the ball. As far as anyone is concerned, I look like someone who's played softball before, and that was all I was going for. Then it's the bottom of the inning. I sprint to right field before anyone could tell me otherwise. And the ball never comes to me. We get three outs. And then a huge thunderstorm happens and rains out the game. And that's it. It's.
So as far as anyone knows, you are a proficient softball player.
Absolutely.
You tricked him, Dan.
Yeah.
Now you're grounder to the shortstop.
Yeah.
Did it have some mustard on it? Like, did he have to make a play or was it like a...
I wasn't watching him. I was just sprinting to first.
Yeah. Showing everyone how fast you are.
Yeah. Because that's the only thing that I thought could save me in this is that like I'm a good runner with good hustle and I'm very fast.
Yes. And that, I mean, honestly, you can make a name for yourself in company softball just by being fast because no one is.
Yeah.
And if you can beat a ball to first base, suddenly they might have you batting first.
Yeah. I also think
so exciting.
I was you if you were there, you'd be able to tell how badly I'd been overcompensating because we played in Central Park, which is 2 miles from my apartment, and I ran there. Like,
okay.
Like just showed up already covered in sweat and like clearly having run as like so I'm definitely an athlete, right? We agree.
did people say, did you run here?
You know what's worse than that?
And this is how like small and insecure I am, is someone said, "Did you jog here?" And I corrected them and said, "I ran here." I'm just so humiliated by myself. Yeah. What are the I could have said yes.
What were your splits on the way to the game? That's okay. So what was your glove situation?
I borrowed one of the gloves from somebody else on the team.
Okay.
They expect people to not have a lot of equipment or be very experienced. So they're just like extra gloves from siblings that people have.
Oh, this is more ramshackle than I'm used to.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's and just in like seeing everybody else play on the field, where do you think you fit in? Are you actually probably right in the middle of talent wise?
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured. Okay. That's a nice feeling too. That's like the real success is you watch everybody else play and you like, you watch somebody else throw a wild throw to first base or like drop something easy or let something go over their head. And you're like, well, I could have gotten that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
You're waiting for your team to make errors. So you can be like, yes.
Yeah.
Not as bad as him. Everybody see that?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to, next year because the season is over now.
The last game got rained out.
Yes. It was a 3-game season. I was only in town for one of them and it got rained out after one inning. And we were the only team who scored a run that game, so we won.
We live in very different ecosystems because our games get smoked out.
Oh shit.
There was a whole last year American Dad, and I will say American Dad, not we. American Dad won the championship. Mm-hmm. I didn't play in a single game in that. I think they stopped inviting me. Could be a lot of reasons. but most likely it was talent and skill, talent slash skill, and a deficiency. And so they did well. Of course they did well. They're all these weird gifted athletes. And the season took forever because their games kept getting smoked out. They couldn't go play because of forest fires. And that in that case, the season just keeps going and you just move the game. You postpone it to another time.
Oh,
see, the amount of time that people make for softball in their lives is baffling to me.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like our league, the East Coast League, does that as much. I think if like a game gets canceled, it's like, well, fuck it. I didn't really want to play anyway.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Let's get into the show where we ask each other questions and give each other answers. I have a quick question for you, Soren.
Shoot.
And I have very little to contribute to it, but I was wondering if there is a business or product or industry that you thought you could conquer once you became a father. Like there was a whole new world exposed to you that you hadn't needed to be a part of, a consumer in, and now that you were in it, you saw a spot for you. The reason I bring this up, my only contribution to it is my brother David, as soon as he had kids and was listening to like the music that people make for children, one thing immediately became clear, a lot of it is bad. And another thing that became clear is kids like to listen to the same songs over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so his light bulb went off as like, we make an album that's very simple, that kids love, but that adults will be able to tolerate over and over and over again. You know, it's not like a Shrieking Elmo song or anything like that. Like there's no reason that a song for kids about, there's an album that his son likes a whole lot. I think it's called 21 Trucks. And every single song on this album is just,
yeah,
this one's about police cars. This one's about street sweepers. Yeah.
I'm familiar.
And it's like, it's a great album. It's exactly what we're talking about as far as like, this is an enjoyable, like a thing that a parent can tolerate. And yeah.
The dump truck song is a strip banger.
Yeah. And there just seems to be like a market for that, for people who know, like, and which isn't to say that it's easy. It's hard to write catchy songs. It's hard to write songs that are going to appeal to kids and adults both. But he immediately was like, let's get all of us together. The three brothers who we played in the band for years together. And like, let's just fucking bang out an album of songs for kids about, you know, fill in the blank. I'm not going to give away his ideas now because we're still going to make this album one day. But like an album that is good for kids, but also catchy and like palatable for adults is something that he thinks there's a hole in this market that three O'Briens can fill.
Well, you see what a group like They Might Be Giants has done, which is they were not for kids. And then they were like, oh, but the transition would be so easy. Like the path was clear for them and there was nobody in the way. And they were like, oh, let's just do like a bunch of songs about science.
Yeah.
And it was hugely successful.
Yeah. And I think Guster did the same thing. Guster is another great like folky pop rock band.
Yeah.
And they have been successful as like just being a band forever. They didn't have side jobs or anything like that. But they're also not like a household name, I wouldn't say. And then one day they were just like, we could probably write a fucking album of songs that are like, brush your teeth, wash your hands. And then they did that. And it's great.
Yeah. I have thought about this actually, because how can you not think about it when you're trying to wet your beak after you have a baby and you're like, well, how do I make this work for me?
Yeah.
So there are a couple. One is that my son will just sit there and watch garbage trucks. Just watch him drive and like watch him pick up trash, and is super excited to do that. And it's not just him; it's every kid. They all, when the garbage truck comes down our street, the children run out to watch. And there's a channel on YouTube where it's just somebody who's around the country, I guess, has filmed garbage trucks collecting trash, and it's just boring, and it's not even like soothing because it's a lot of terrible screeching noises and like this like diesel-y thunder coming out of it. Mm-hmm. And he just will sit there and watch these trucks pick up trash cans, throw stuff in the back, put the trash can back, move on to the next house. And this thing is 40 minutes long. And when he was really young, we would let him watch it. And like we needed some time for packing or whatever we were doing. We'd let him watch it. And we were like, I can't tell if this is bad for him or not. Because objectively, like there's nothing really terrible that he's gleaning from this, but also he's not gaining anything either.
Yeah. It's, and also, and because so much of it is concentrated on like YouTube videos, which obviously weren't available to us when we were kids, I can't connect that to like, I didn't know a garbage truck kid growing up. So I don't know if that's a weird kid type.
Yeah. And so just like in these uncharted waters with it. We're like, wow, I'm just going to let him do it. And then once he got through the 40-minute video a few times, because, you know, YouTube will also pick up where you left off. And once we got through it a few times, he was just like, you could tell he'd already seen this one. Oh, the one in the snow. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember this orange truck. And I thought, oh, it would be so easy to just make more of these. It would be the easiest thing in the world. And you could even pay people to do it anywhere that they live, pay them a small amount of money, or just get your friends to do it. And like, just film these trucks. Then you just stitch it all together, no music or anything over it. And your YouTube channel is a huge success. But the one that occurred to me first, and that I think still is a very good idea, is that when we were having a baby, you get a lot of the books, like What to Expect When You're Expecting in the Mayo Clinic book of birth. And there's a lot of really good factual information in there. For what you should be preparing for, what your how big your baby is in comparison to fruit for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And each month it's like this advent calendar, or each week it's like this advent calendar where you see like, oh, now he has eyebrows. Oh, how interesting. Oh, how exciting. Oh, there's fingernails growing. And then there's a section in all these books for the dad. And I guess the assumption is the dad isn't reading these, that the dad is just coming up at the very end and he's like, well, where's my section? And so there's like four or five or like sometimes nine pages dedicated to a dad. And they're the most patronizing, talked down to group that makes me think, oh, first of all, I'm worried about other dads out there if like this is where they're getting their information. But also like have a little respect for the dad. The bar is not that low. It's a lot of stuff like, a baby's like a beer. The head should be the highest part. And like that kind of shit. You're like, oh no. And I just think I could write a book, What to Expect for When You're Expecting type of book, but for dads, that's really good and full of good information and is compelling for even, you know, not even a dad who is as invested as I am, but just interesting enough and like giving them context for each thing and why it matters that they'd be like, oh, this is actually really neat. I think that'd be easy to do. I think you could write that in your sleep.
Yeah. I've always thought it would be easy to write children's books, and then I tried to write one, and you can't. I mean, not that you can't, but like, it's the kind of thing where, like having read a few children's books to my nieces and nephews, thought like, these are simple. This is like a paragraph's worth of text. I should just pick an idea and like do it. Just yeah. like this is a book about birthdays, and then write a paragraph of cute bullshit about birthdays, and then print money is how the step process went in my brain. But it's sort of like pitching to, like, if I had to I'm trying to think of what I can compare it to that's not also writing, but that's my only frame of reference for anything. It's like if I had to write Gossip Girl, it's a show that I don't know and don't really like and haven't lived with, and because of that, I don't know what's good about it or what people like about it. So anytime I would try to write a Gossip Girl spec script, it would probably come off like I'm making fun of it, because I'm just throwing stuff at the wall. It's like it's shots in the dark where
yeah,
like I'll write something that comes off as stupid, and if anyone challenged me on it, I'd be like, yeah, well, I think your show is fucking stupid, so I wrote a stupid thing. Well, you really need to be in the right headspace for this kind of stuff. It's much harder than just like writing a good children's book. Like, as soon as I put pen to paper on my children's book, it seems like I'm mocking children's books.
You would do your research, and you haven't, because you're not a parent. You've read like you've read like 15 children's books probably in like the last year or whatever time it was that you've had these young nieces and nephews. But if you were to do Gossip Girl, you would watch the entire catalog of Gossip Girl, and then you would latch onto these little kernels that you're like, ah, that's something I do like, and that would just be like the seed for whatever you build. And so I think writing a kid's book, I will say I'm never going to do this, because writing a kid's book is, to me, is like people who decide they're going to be realtors. There's just so many of them out there who are like, basically somebody in their subconscious is saying, I don't have any talent or means. What's the thing I can still do and make money? And like, they're landing on these things. They're like, oh, kids books, that's got to be easy. I'm an adult. I know way more than kids. But when you read kids' books, and you read a lot of them, and you read both the good ones and the really, really bad ones, you realize like what makes a good one and why the bad ones are bad. Now, that doesn't mean that the kids latch onto the good ones. Like, most of the time they latch on the bad ones, but that doesn't matter, because that's not who you're writing the good ones for. You're writing it for the Caldecott Award. And my experience is that those Caldecott Awards books, those are not the ones my son gravitates toward. Those are the ones I like reading that I think are more interesting, like Where the Wild Things Are and Make Way for Ducklings. And there's another one called Journey that's very good that doesn't even have any words. It's all just illustrations, but the story is so clear in it. And those are not the ones he gravitates towards. He wants the ones where like...
He wants Hatchet.
Yeah. He wants the fucking a Paw Patrol story that is just like Chicoletta's statue gets stolen for a day and then they figure out where it is. And I'm like, I can't read this to you again. The only place where our two minds met was with Curious George, and that was fun to read to him. Mm-hmm. You're right. If you want to write like a good children's story that will sell really well, you write it for parents.
Yeah. All right. I'll keep that in mind. Hawthorne is a premium grooming brand that tailors your personal care routine to your unique profile. Hawthorne uses data from hundreds of thousands of customers to recommend perfect products for your body chemistry, skin type, hair type, and lifestyle. Upgrade the products that help you, like your body wash, shampoo, deodorant, face cleanser, moisturizer, and cologne. I'm going off script because I'm telling you, I, Daniel, love all Hawthorne products. I am 100% a Hawthorne household at this point. I love their shampoo, their conditioner, and their body wash, and their soaps. I even bought soaps when I ran out of soaps, because sometimes they send us stuff for free, but I didn't care. I'm spending my money on this company anyway because I love it. And devotees of the show will recall that I am a bit of a candle snob. I buy all of my candles from Hawthorne now. In addition to skincare and hair care products, they sell candles, and I bought them all, and they're great. take their quiz. I took their quiz and they asked me some questions. They asked me questions about like what I wanted in a shampoo. Ah, goopiness. And I answered all their questions. And then they gave me the results based on my answers. And I bought everything they told me to buy. And I loved every bit of it. The quiz was quick and easy. And I answered it honestly. Hawthorne's grooming products are my answer to look good, feel good, and smell good. Plus candles. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co and using promo code QQ to get 10% off your first purchase. That's HAWTHORNE.co, promo code QQ for 10% off your first purchase. The only other thing, if you have any answers for markets you feel like you could conquer that aren't specifically related to kids, because I to expand the question out to that, something that my buddy Chris and I, Chris Brignola, he runs a very successful junk food review blog and Instagram and Snapchat account. It's called Junk Banter. It's wildly successful. He's a very funny writer. Check it out. We were just talking about how like fatigue settling in the middle of the workday and you want an energy drink. If you're not drinking coffee or trying to kick coffee or whatever, There are no non-embarrassing energy drinks out there, really. If you don't like Red Bull, even is a stupid sounding thing. But everything else on the market is Monster or Force or Fierce or something like that.
Get like, raped with taurine.
Yeah, they have these like fucking flames on the cans, and it's so aggressive and borderline violent. And you feel in your mid-30s, you feel like a child pulling that out at the workplace at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, where it's like you're on your way to a meeting. It's like, oh, hold on, boss, I need to just have one more sip of Dick Out. And then you drink this big flaming can of Dick Out just because you're low on B12 or whatever. And just if there was some non-coffee, adult-oriented energy drink that had a little bit of class to it, we think there would be a market for that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it would be like a sipping man's energy drink.
Yeah.
Because there are 5-hour energies, which are more discreet. But still, the idea is, the pretense is that you're shooting it. Like, you're treating it like alcohol. You want something that you can have on your desk and that you can take sips of. And you basically, you're self-medicating with it. Like, you're deciding what your dose is.
Correct.
I like that a lot. I think I would enjoy that. Although caffeine's not really my bag.
Yeah, you're not a caffeine person.
I get it. I get why that would be appealing. I mean, in the afternoons, I drink tea now because I don't know what else to do with myself.
Sure.
I like the idea of having something. And when I'm sitting there working, it's just like, what can I put in my face? And it's just, there's something about working where you're like, you want to be eating while you're doing it, or just like chewing or something. I don't know if that's just habit that's built up in me over time, but to have tea there, at least like you're sipping something and it's not doing any damage to me, but it's also still like fulfilling this weird little, I got to use my mouth piece.
Yeah, I do. I just drank water and LaCroix all day. And
LaCroix is one that I think everybody uses. Yeah, that gum and LaCroix feels like the writer's room staple, where like people are just trying to stay away from the snacks.
Yeah.
So they just are pounding LaCroix all day.
Yeah, I'm truly drinking a criminal amount of LaCroix. I don't know if we talked about this on mic or off mic. I know we talked about it. I just don't know if we ever talked about it on mic. That like,
I
drink an absurd amount of LaCroix. I think this was off mic. And a few months ago, someone on Twitter was talking about how he was like, let's create a safe space and I'll admit that we're all drinking too much LaCroix. Everyone, there's no judgment here. Just drop down in replies to this how much LaCroix you drink. I'll start 5 cans a day. And I thought, oh, fuck. Mine's way higher than that.
Somebody else has
this guy offered himself up as a sacrifice. And like, I'm knocking 5 out by 1 p.m.
Well, they really expanded their flavor profile. What is your LaCroix of choice?
Oh, fantastic question. I prefer berry. It's pretty subtle.
Wow, so pedestrian.
Yeah, I know. I also like Raz Cranberry, and hibiscus is probably my most exotic that I gravitate towards. But even that's a little too sweet.
Sweet?
Yeah.
Sweet. I would never describe a LaCroix as sweet.
Oh, there's something like Hawaiian punchy about hibiscus.
Yeah, there's an element. Yes, I will agree that there's like you're getting a weird flavor profile that suggests you should also be getting sugar, and maybe that's what's triggering it for you, but or like making your insulin spike or whatever. But man, those other choices are basic bitch.
Yeah, absolutely. I strayed out of my comfort zone and I got I think it's pastique once, and I hated it. This will invite questions. It tasted wet. in an unpleasant way.
What? You had a damp drink? That was a problem?
Yeah. It wasn't like hydrating. It just tasted wet, like watermelon.
Okay. I'm even more in the weeds now. I wanted to be on your team, and now I understand it even less.
That's fine. What are your LaCroix drinks?
Well, so this is a controversial one, but key lime.
Key lime tastes like hookah to me.
Yeah, so everybody's got their like their hookah. Oh, like it's a flavor, like a tobacco flavor?
Yeah, tobacco mixed with some kind of something metallic.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I had somebody else who shamed me for it and said it tastes like Band-Aids, and everyone laughed and thought, and it was clear that they all thought, yes, that's a great way to describe it. And then I thought, I don't know what Band-Aids taste like, but I like it. It's the only one that tastes even remotely like a flavor to me. The other ones are, maybe I'm just like destroyed my mouth over the years with all this fast food, but the other ones just taste like bubble water with like barely a hint of anything else. Like I wouldn't even be able to, it's like such a small whisper that I would have to say, come again, to know like what they're trying to get across.
Yeah.
But the key lime at least is like, no, look, this is lime. You're going to know it's lime. And it kind of has that same, it's not quite a sweetness, but it feels like it should be sweet to it. Mm-hmm. And I like that element too, because I'm a big soda fan. And it's now occurring to me that we spent a lot of time on LaCroix.
Yeah.
In this podcast.
Sure have.
I feel like we're alienating a lot of our audience. Mm-hmm. But it plays such a big role in our lives.
It's like one of the only things that I have. I wake up in the morning and I have a bottle or two of water, and then I drink coffee for
a lot of gummy bears in between all that.
Sure. Then the day is after water, the day is separated between like socially acceptable time to drink coffee and then the rest of the time, which is LaCroix and water. It's all I do.
Yeah. I drink it too. I don't even like seltzer water, and I drink LaCroix because I'm like, maybe this will be the day that I like it.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I can't believe this is our show.
I love it. Listen, the stuff where I'm as we're doing it, where I check out for a second and I try to see the forest or the trees and I think, oh shit, this is going to be alienating for everybody. I can't believe we're talking about this for so long. Then when I'm on Twitter, the people are like chiming in and like trying to be part of that discussion. They're like, no, I totally agree. Or I can't believe that you believe that. You're an idiot. And please don't do that last one. But those are the ones that people get most impassioned by. So maybe we're just tapping into something. Well, Dan, I have a quick question for you. First of all, the preface question. You're familiar with like that wall art that says like live, laugh, love. Or like you stay in an Airbnb and there'll be like joy written in cursive on the wall.
Yeah.
Or like the wine rack says vino on it, or like vino time and an exclamation point. And family, and just like these like mindless affirmation type shit.
Another market that I feel like we should be able to corner, by the way, just like get a nice font and write in this house, love wins over a fucking flower or something. And then print money at Marshall's.
Well, that's partially why I'm bringing it up. I feel like I can do these really well. I can make some really good wall art like this. But I saw some of that during my trip. And at first, that kind of stuff really enrages me because I'm like, this is so mindless. This means nothing. Like, this is so empty. And I get very upset about it. And then as I was like staying in this house, I started to have this epiphany where I was like, well, shit, what is the art in my house? Because the minute I buy something, I try and buy something with meaning. But when it becomes something that I see every single day of my life, then eventually it just becomes mindless good intention. Like, in the same way, this is just like a shortcut to that same mindless good intention, where I'm not, I have like a piece of art in my house that I loved when I got, and now I walk past it every day and it's, I'm like blind to it. It's like seeing an ad on a website where like I know where an ad is supposed to be. I just don't look that way anymore. I don't stand in front of it and really enjoy it or anything. It's just this thing that's trying to create some good energy, but that I don't even think about and means nothing to me anymore. And I'm like, well, maybe all art is just this stuff. And this is just like the shortcut to it. This is how you get there without having to deal with like finding art that you like or finding out about art or learning how to appreciate art. You're just like, no, it's all going to end up being the same shit anyway. Just put whatever you want on your wall, as long as it's like the energy of it is, it's like an affirmation. Now, my question to you is that crazy? Do you think that this art is, the art that you have in your house is like, for better or worse, better than the joy and live, laugh, love stuff?
No. I mean, I have a number of thoughts on this. First of all, I have a very sparsely decorated apartment, and part of it was like, I wanted a big piece of art to speak to me. And this is not just my current place, but like every place I've ever been to, there has been a large chunk of my living room in every apartment where a giant piece of art should go. And it has remained blank until I moved out. And I imagine the large chunk of space in this current apartment will remain blank as well. Because I'm really dumb about art and I can't commit to a big piece like that. And I don't, and nothing has like spoken to me enough as far as like big art goes. But I guess I'm of split mind, because there's two pieces of art that I do have in my apartment and they're identical. And the thing that I like about them is that they are specific. They're by a Santa Monica artist, first of all, and that matters to me because I love Santa Monica and spent so much time there. And to describe them, they both look like, they're like metal on wood pieces. I'll text you a picture of them and maybe we'll put them in the, we'll have Bacon put this in the footnotes of this episode so people can see what I'm talking about. And it's like metal on wood, and it looks like two commas or quotation marks as conceived of by Tim Burton. They're kind of that Nightmare Before Christmas janky-ass curl thing. And the levels that I like about them, Santa Monica, it's made by an artist and the money went directly to the artist. They're cool looking. I just think they're interesting looking things. And the other parts, and this is where it gets very corny and it's almost embarrassing if people are in my apartment and ask about them, is that they kind of look like punctuation to me, and that matters to me on two different levels. One of them is writing. I like some kind of subtle signifier of writing, because I'm a writer by trade. I know I'm primarily known to our audience as a podcaster, but I have a side gig where I write for television and books. And so anything that like, without being too loud of an announcement of an appreciation of writing, I want it represented here in my home. And another part, and this is even more alienating and like corny, is that they kind of look like, if I want to get specific about what punctuation they look like, is they look like commas. And, you know, that's like, all of my sentences are run-on sentences. I overuse commas like crazy. And B, comma is an important symbol in the particular church that I went to, that I liked a whole lot, the United Church of Christ. We used commas in a lot of our literature and a lot of our like flyers and posters and banners, because the comma signifies that God is still talking, and so we still need to listen. It's not a period; it's a comma. It's just like literally the comma was a symbol around the church, and the comma tells us that God is still talking.
So you say our literature?
Yeah.
You mean like the Bible?
Literature is not the right word. Just like the iconography surrounding the specific church that I started going to in Westwood, California. There was like commas everywhere. It was like the practically a logo. And it's not just this one church. It's a lot of UCC churches throughout the country that use commas.
That God is still talking. But that's the presumption that God is talking in the first place. The comma is what you're putting in the words of God so that it's clear that like there is no finality to it, that the word keeps continuing? Or
it's about having a progressive church that isn't purely dogmatic and like the word of God, period. This is very much like you have to keep listening for God. He's not done, or she's not done. And you need to evolve, and you need to never feel like all of the answers are written down and you have everything.
Okay.
So just like keep yourself open to the idea that you are still a student.
This is God's dialogue. So I was having a hard time understanding because I was trying to figure out where the commas, like who is speaking. And I was like, oh, the commas are where God lives. I see. Like the space you take in between turns and things like that is what, but I was like, no.
Oh, that's an interesting interpretation.
That doesn't sound. Yeah. So I'm getting it now. I'm getting a full picture of it. And I do like that. That's like right up my elitist dickhead alley. Like, that's something that I'm like, ooh. Oh yeah. Okay.
That's
cool.
That's the art that I have in my apartment. The only other art that I have is a picture of my dog Jackson photoshopped onto Andrew Jackson's presidential portrait that my friend Elise got me for Christmas years ago. Those are the only two things in my apartment that could be considered art. The rest of the stuff is like pictures that I've taken or that have been given to me. And roundabout way of getting back to the source of this question, I like my two art pieces because I like having a connection to them and having an explanation for them. But I also wish I had some of that Marshall's Home Goods in this house. Love wins. It's wine o'clock somewhere. Bullshit. Because anytime I've been to an Airbnb or a relative's house where they have like these you know, mass-produced, pleasant-looking things, I've enjoyed it. I have never walked into a house and I saw, like, live, laugh, love over someone's toilet and been mad about it. I was like, that's good advice. and you don't need to have a... It's just nice to look at. I don't know. You don't need to... Like, not everything... And this is more for myself than anyone else. Not everything needs to have a big, long, stupid story to it. I don't need to, like, I got this painting after I murdered a guy or whatever. Like, you don't need a personal connection. It's just like, yeah, this looks nice. This is a nice thing. It was made by someone who understands home decor better than I do. And that's why I bought it.
Yes. A series of plates going down your wall that say, like, joy, love, hope, like that kind of thing is not for me, but I also, it's not negative. I get sort of enraged by it only because it's of its like uselessness. But I guess if I'm really like being honest with myself, it's benign. It's just like, it's good intention. It's like mindless good intention.
And I think the thing of it is it's not supposed to be for you.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's
like totally even though fair. It's in your house and you're gonna be around it more than anyone else, it's, even if it's your favorite art piece in the world, like you say about the art that you do like, you eventually stop paying attention to it.
Yeah.
But like for me who's visiting or anyone else who's visiting, it's like, oh, cool art. Oh, live, laugh, love. Oh, it's wine o'clock somewhere. Oh, don't talk to me until I've had my wine. Oh, God, there's a whole lot of wine iconography.
This person really likes their wine. Here's how I think no whining, but wine. Yeah. So I think that this is how we could corner this market, Daniel, is,
hell yeah.
There are a lot of people who have done things where like they steer in the opposite direction, where instead of a welcome mat, it says fuck off, or like there's like negative ones that are sort of jokey, but I think you could still get the same sentiment across, but have it be much more direct and real and just, and completely different than what's currently on your wall. So like you could have ones that say like, just like in cursive on your wall, just says blind optimism. Or like you could have one on your wall that just says home is where the home is.
Yeah.
And like you could do things like that would be very fun for like someone to come in and see, because that's stuff you're trained to not look at in the first place, I guess, unless you're peeing.
Yeah.
But when you did catch it, you're like, all right, well, let's see what this shit says. And then you catch something like that and you're like, ah, to the point. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I would like to see a piece somewhere that was like, dance like no one's watching, mostly. Some kind of qualifier that like grounds me a little bit.
Qualifiers me out. Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah.
No matter what, just smile. I guess that one has some problematic elements to it. but I think, you know, we'd hash it out, obviously. We'd get the business rolling. So I'm going to create a Google Doc. We'll just come up with a few of these and then we'll get rich.
That sounds good. I would love to be rich. Seems like it would make things easier, you know?
Yeah.
You know what? Speaking of rich, I have nowhere to put this thought.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of my worst thoughts, but I've been thinking about it for a while. If I had Jeff Bezos's money, I would also probably go to space.
Yeah.
And
Which is a lot. Oh, that's a lot for you to say because you fucking hate space.
I don't care for space. It's none of my business. And like Bezos, I wouldn't learn anything up there. But like everyone's so mad when he went to space. And there's certainly better things that he could be doing with his money. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. But I'm just trying to think, like, what would I do if I had truly in the top three amount of money in the world? I'm certain I would do some dumb shit. I like to think that I would hold on to some of my humanity and still, like, maximize the amount that I can give to charity and, like, and use my powers and my money for good to help the world. But I also know that if I didn't go to space, I would do whatever my equivalent of going to space is, like whatever some James Cameron deep sea bullshit, I would waste so much money that could solve another country's problems, I would use to go to the bottom of the ocean and just look at stuff, or throw a home concert, or I would be like who's that dumb fuck that owns the Knicks, Dolan. Jimmy Dolan?
I don't know.
James Dolan. He's the owner of the Knicks. He's been running that team into the ground for a very long time. And he's so rich that he has a band, JD and the Straight Shot, like this awful, awful blues band, and just like holds concerts at Madison Square Garden and makes his band open up for bands that people want to see. And like, God help me, if I'm the richest person on the planet, I'm absolutely doing that. I'm finding how much money it takes for me and my brothers to open for Ben Folds somewhere and and just like do it. It's really embarrassing to think about and admit, but like I think about Jeff Bezos' money and he's like putting on a cowboy hat and going to space and I'm like, yeah man, I fucking get it. Look at all your money. What have you always wanted to do? Go to space like an idiot? All right, I can't say that I have any nobler aspirations.
I think that's not crazy. I mean, that is, you say you want to hold on to your humanity. I think that's part of your humanity. It's like, what opportunities are afforded to me that no one else has now that I have all this money? And like, what is, I know that people say it's limitless, but there's got to be some limit. Let me go find out what that is.
Yeah.
And I get that. That's a very human impulse. And I think you just have to, as long as you're like, here's what I think. I think if you're Yvon Chouinard, do you know who that is?
No.
Yvon Chouinard created Patagonia. He's a billionaire. Oh. Makes a lot of money. The company does a lot of good. So if you've got, as long as you've got this like track record of receipts of like you trying to do good in the world and trying to, with your company and using your money for important causes, I think you're allowed some of those things. I think sometimes people will be like, oh, he's making a surfboard made out of all gold. Perfect.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If people can say like, oh, you know, he did sort of revolutionize energy in the country. So I guess it's okay that he figured out a way to surf down an active volcano. Like, I didn't know anyone had that dream. It turns out he did and spent a lot of money building a suit and a surfboard for it.
And he brought four weirdos with him.
Yeah.
That's the saddest part about the joke. Is it Bezos or is it Bezos?
Who cares?
Okay. Well, that weird part about that story was that it's so clear this man doesn't have any friends.
Yes.
Because the people that he chose to go to space with are complete strangers and like family. And so the people who feel obligated, and what the fuck did they talk about on the way up? Like, I've jumped out of a plane before, and you're going up with your friends. So like, there's nothing better. It's you and your buddies, and you've got like, you're just, your energy's up, and you're amped.
You're giddy.
Yeah. And so like, what are these giddy strangers talking to each other about?
It's probably like Jeff Bezos. Bezos is like, I don't know which dorks he brought on, but I'm hoping it's like a brother-in-law who, like, as the rocket is going off, he's like, so did you have time to look over that proposal I sent you? I'm thinking I kind of want to like make my own shingle, you know, to have like sort of my own Amazon, because I got ideas, Jeff.
Yeah, how could these people not be pitching him on the way up? Just like, this is my shot. This is my one opportunity to talk to him. I didn't anticipate the cowboy hat throwing me a little bit, but I want to tell him about my business. All right, well, that's
before we go,
show.
Do you have your, like, not go to space, but go underwater? Or
what's the thing that I would do?
Yeah, what's your stupid thing that, like, even no matter how many receipts you have, no matter how much good you do, people on the internet are still going to be like, I can't believe he spent his money on that.
Yeah, I would, and I don't really even know how to go about doing it, but get a bunch of lobbyists together and make a day. It doesn't have to be like Soren Bowie Day or anything like that. It doesn't have to be Martin Luther King Day, but it's like, I would make a holiday and it has to be recognized. Like, I would force it on everyone, like some sort of national holiday, a day where kids get to miss school, some sort of fun party happens, and that it's such a good idea that people are like, yeah, we're just going to keep doing this.
Yeah, it becomes load-bearing, too big to fail.
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, the dream is that eventually it gets its own seasonal candy. Mm-hmm. Like there's some sort of candy associated with it. Like start seeing it in the store again, and they're like, oh shit, I didn't realize it was already Soren Bowie Day or whatever.
That's such a good dream. That's such a good answer. That's so much better than opening for Ben Folds, which I could probably figure out a way to do now.
I want to give everybody an opportunity to follow us, to come talk to us on Twitter and not at our houses. You can follow Daniel at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren_LTD on Twitter. That's really the only places you're going to find me, unfortunately. I don't do Instagram. I don't do TikTok. I don't have... Although... God, I hate to keep this show going, but I saw on TikTok, Dan, that somebody started playing Guess Who, asking only subjective questions. And I thought, where'd you get that idea?
Ooh.
And it was doing great. It was like doing gangbusters. People saying, I got to try this. And I thought, oh, man, that was ours. Anyway, you can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can follow our CFO, Bacon, at Make Me Bacon, Please. But please is spelled PLS. And you can follow a quick question at QQ_Soren and Dan. You can email us at QQ_Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. And then at some point you might be able to see a picture of, or like get like an idea of who he is. But we have a sound engineer, a producer, an editor, and his name is Gabe Harder. And you can go do all that at GabeHarder.com someday in the future. Okay, bye.
Bye.